Hello and welcome to the Charity Digital Podcast. The benefits of hybrid working are quite widely known. Hybrid can award employees greater flexibility, save time and money on travel and expenses, overcome geographical exclusion, reduce spending on overheads, improve communication and collaboration, support better mental health, and so on. We've been talking and writing about these benefits for months, and we've been cautiously encouraging hybrid across the UK charity sector. But in the past few weeks, we've actually adopted a hybrid model ourselves, with Charity Digital employees going into our London offices twice a week. And immediately we noticed some pitfalls that people haven't really been talking about. These are the sorts of teething problems that only become clear when hybrid is put into practice. We struggled to find a schedule that suited everyone's needs, for example. We wanted teams to spend time together to promote collaboration, but we wanted cross-department working too to promote wider teamwork, while still ensuring other individual needs were met. That wasn't an easy task. We found the office a little noisy, with the sound of several Zoom meetings echoing all at once. We didn't have all the right equipment in place, hot desking lacked the personal touch, and it's fair to say we needed to do a little bit of spring cleaning. And that's just the short-term problems. Based on some of the research we've done, long-term problems could potentially arise, such as presenteeism, proximity bias, exclusion and intrusion, the loss of the social, and so on. So yes, hybrid working is a positive step, which we still encourage, but it does create problems and pitfalls that the charity sector simply can't ignore. Today's podcast will help you avoid those problems, avoid those pitfalls, giving you advice and sharing knowledge that we have accumulated through research and through practice. I'm Johan Mark Jones, content editor at Charity Digital, and I'm joined by my three esteemed colleagues, Rabia Fazel, customer service manager, Stuart Barber, client account specialist, and on her very first podcast, Laura Stanley, our content lead. We are all currently working from the office 2 days a week, but today we are at home, recording over Zoom, as ever, so apologies for any noise or connectivity issues. Without further ado, I want to start with perfection. I think we all have this idea of hybrid working, which may or may not have conformed to the reality in practice. So I just wanted to ask, to kick us off, what does a perfect hybrid working system look like to you? What would you like to see, essentially? And Stuart, I'll start with you.
Thank you. That's a really difficult question, because I think people's needs are different and they're different from week to week. My thing would be greater flexibility or more flexibility. I've been very lucky with my time to be able to change my work schedule slightly, to be able to go into the office earlier in the morning and leave earlier, so I miss peak times for travel. It's something that I'm still not overly comfortable with.
Yeah, does anyone want to jump in? I mean, the travel thing for me as well, it's if you're going in particularly during, we are hopefully coming towards the end of COVID, but it's very anxiety-inducing for everyone, I think, and that definitely helps with that flexibility. Laura?
100%, I completely agree. I think the flexibility really helps to sort of grease the wheels of hybrid working a little bit. I think because we have our team days, which I find really helpful, but it is also nice to be able to pick the other day. I actually find hybrid working really, really helpful. I find the change of scenery quite motivating, so I think it's quite good to have the choice between both.
I'd agree with Laura on that. I really enjoy the sort of flexibility, knowing that I can be at home for projects that require a lot of concentration, and knowing that I can pop to the office when I miss just that kind of, one-on-one human contact, when I want to see my colleagues, when I want to just sort of, work on something that requires collaboration, but you just don't want to be sending those sorts of Teams messages back and forth all day. You can just grab the person in person and say, oh, what do we do about this thing? That thing. So
yeah, could any of you speak on other things such as sort of cybersecurity, what you'd like to see? What would your setup ideally be?
My setup ideally would involve not carrying lots of kit at the moment. I understand that's a very practical part of hybrid working. One of the things I really like about going to the office is being able to wander around, London and sort of do all these things. And in terms of cybersecurity, I feel very secure knowing that I have one device that is for work only. I just kind of wish I didn't have to carry it around all the time, but I'm quite happy with using things like Authenticator and using my work device and my phone to kind of access things securely, with the security of platforms such as 365 and SharePoint. I'm quite happy with where we stand. And it's, sorry, I should one last thing. It's helped us. Our cybersecurity has been robust enough to help us withstand some fairly serious attacks on our systems. Done.
To that point, though, I think that it's not even a it is obviously such a big cybersecurity like problem, but having your own laptop, I think, helps sort of draw that boundary between work and home life, because I think that's a big struggle with hybrid working. So with using my own laptop, so for instance, I have my own podcast, and then when I was doing it last night, it felt like I was on my laptop all day because I had to be on my laptop for, you know, to edit my own podcast. So it was just a bit difficult. I think it can be hard to log off sometimes.
Yeah, I think that's true. I think we're very lucky that we're in the position that we have our dedicated work machines. So cybersecurity in that respect is actually taken care of at a greater level. It is that thing that the boundary gets blurred if you're got to bring your own device policy or something like that. I think that there is a security risk there. I know from our side of things, being someone that helps administer the cybersecurity for the organization, even if our staff members are using their own devices for a period of time, we know they're covered. I think in other organizations where maybe it's you're working from home and it's like, it's all right, I'll just jump on the family computer, which you may not have thought in the past, oh, I should have this as secure as maybe my work one, which is where the difficulty could be. I can agree with Rabia more. The carrying equipment around is a something that we're going to have to get used to, I think, more than anything else. I know at the beginning with the first lockdowns, the struggle, one of my big struggles was adapting to be using a laptop and not having all my documents that were on my desktop and things like that. We're sort of 18 months down the track now, and my work laptop is my work life. Everything's on there. I would actually struggle to go back using my desktop when I'm actually in the office.
Yeah, I mean, that does lead me on to another question, which is like, I've always struggled a little with hot desking generally because of the lack of personal touch, as it were. And I'm wondering, can you see a way that you can make hot desking work a little bit better than maybe it does at the minute? Because even in the past, is there a personal touch you can add to that? Or do you generally, would you just not want a hot desk? Is there any thoughts on that, really?
Go on.
We're all speaking at once there. I don't mind hot desking, to be honest. It's one of those things I don't overly feel a great need to decorate my workspace in the office, especially as the majority of my time isn't going to be there moving forwards. I've made a very cozy and comfortable and lush and green jungleified home office, and that's a really calm working area for myself. And I think actually when I'm in the office and it's sort of collaboration time and things like that, I don't necessarily want to be surrounded by knickknacks and things like that. It's a slightly different situation. It's kind of, oh, there's no toys here. Your plant collection's not about, your ceramics collection's not about. It's work, head in the game, go, go, go.
It's easier to be tidier, isn't it? I find in my old job, like, things used to accumulate on my desk if I didn't, and this way they don't. So that's good news for everyone, I think.
Yeah, and things sit there, don't they? They sit there for time and time again, and you don't get rid of them because they've been there for ages and you might need them. Probably don't even know what half of them are. One thing that I would like to see, especially in our situation with hot desking, is actually something about storage. So we can all have somewhere within the office, a drawer or something like that, that is just our own, our stuff's in there. And for like yourself, Johan, that if you wanted a few things on your desk and around you, you store them in your drawer. You go into the office in the morning, you take your drawer out, you've got your notebook, your pens, your pads, whatever you want to put on your desk, you pack it away at the end of the day and it's ready for the next person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Great. I'm just going to jump in and say that, yeah, I'm really with you on that. As much as I like the kind of accessibility and flexibility of hot desking, knowing that you can pop in and, you know, work from any corner of the office, it can feel very sort of anonymous. You're just sort of there. It's a desk and a chair, and now just, you know, get on with it. So it's nice to be able to have even just a small drawer of something that you can make it feel like, oh, it's my workspace, even if it's only for one day and things. For me, I know that I like to have my sort of, you know, tea bags to hand, and just sort of, you know, post-its, always got something on a post-it. So I like knowing that I've got those things to hand. I find it a bit difficult to go to a space where it's just completely anonymous. So yeah, I'd agree with that. Having somewhere small that you can kind of, it's like a kind of mini desk kit, and then you can kind of pack it away when you're done.
The other thing I've really enjoyed as well is you get to sit next to different people. It's if you've got your own desk and you go in and you sit down and it's hello to the same person that sat to your left and to your right, and it's sort of now every day you go in, it's like, oh, wonder who I'm going to be sat with today.
That's really true, actually. That really helped me get to know people, I think, like, and also find my way around the office a bit, because I started off in the middle, then I moved to the back, and it's quite like really helpful.
Yeah, I mean, Laura was, you sort of had an onboarding situation where you, your first time, I mean, my first time in Cherry Digital was nearly a year ago now. And even then, I came to the office and it was very much like stay 10 meters away from me, you know, walk towards me and I'd walk backwards. But it is quite difficult sort of navigating the onboarding side of it. And I kind of want to move on to the pitfalls and sort of talk about the stuff that we've learned in such a short amount of time about how to basically deal with some of this stuff. So just if you could talk about anything, the main things you've noticed now that we've started hot desking, and if you had any kind of ideas of how other charities could maybe mitigate those. So I'm thinking about, for example, the Zoom voices in the background, the different digital skills, the collaboration issues. I think, Stuart, you picked on something really interesting, which is the different stability and mindsets you're in from home and the office. I find that a bit, I know you said you sort of enjoyed it, but I find it a bit, in a way, destabilizing. On a Monday, I'm sort of home in that my own space, but it's because of editing. You do need that quiet and stuff like that. And then you go into the office and it's, but I'm learning to sort of go, okay, it's going to be an office day. So I almost set up tasks where I can be more collaborative and stuff like that. So I'm just thinking about, sorry, I'm going to stop talking, but what are the major pitfalls and stuff like that you're facing? And do you have any solutions to them?
No.
One of the things that I'd like to bring up is I still have colleagues that have joined Charity Digital within the COVID period that I haven't met yet. So Laura and myself, we've had plenty of been in plenty of the same meetings, collaborated on things, but we've not actually met in person. And I actually find that a little bit weird.
Definitely.
And it's like, I think it's probably going to be next week sometime that we're actually finally get to meet in person. And that's a very unusual situation. And I remember when I first started, and it's something that I put out, I'm not the most outgoing of people when I first get to meet new people and things like that. Mm. And I was in a situation where there was 12 people that had to get to know me, and I had to get to know 12 people all at once. And I can't imagine then not having that physical space where you're together, where you learn, actually, is someone sarcastic in the way they speak? Because you don't pick it up over instant messaging and things like that.
Completely. It's difficult. I think part of the solution to that would be making the quiet parts loud. So I think when I first started, I was really nervous about what people, because you can't tell tone over Messenger. It's really difficult. And so asking loads of questions felt really, like, first of all, it looks a lot more intimidating in writing than it does if you just say, hey, can you help me with this? It feels like you're etching something into stone or whatever. And then you don't want to bother people all the time, and you can't see what they're doing. So you don't know if they're like head down desperately in work, don't want to talk to anyone. So I think, we've had a couple of meetings where we've just been like, here are our working principles, how many, like, you know, we have a principle of, you know, Google it and then ask and things like that. But it's also good to say that you can always ask questions. I find that really, really helpful, because then you do know that, you know, that people get to it when they can, but they're not going to be annoyed that you've sent them a message. I think that's really helpful and things like that.
Yeah. I mean, I picked up your tone, Laura, because you obviously have like a tone that's very recognisable, but it makes much more sense when I met you in person. It kind of goes, yeah, that makes sense, you know, because you pick up those things. I think it's also interesting when it comes to stuff like training as well, though. Because, you know, I was obviously showing Laura around Charity Digital, giving the history. It's very hard to convey exactly what you do when you're not face-to-face and actually sitting at a computer and going through things, which, of course, we still can't really do because we're social distanced in the office too, as much as possible as we possibly can. But so I think with training and stuff, I don't know, how do you ensure this sort of personal touch with a hybrid situation? How do you collaborate? Do you spend all your collaboration time in the office, or is that meant for home? Any thoughts on that?
I think that's a really interesting question, because the nature of what we do over in ops is so highly collaborative, and a large part of our patterns of working have developed as a result of working, you know, physically with each other for so long, and that working now using things like Teams and Zoom, we already kind of have that shorthand in place, and we sort of talk about, you know, what we would do if, you know, a new team member joined. And it honestly, the collaboration side of things would be so, so important. And I think we'd have to almost plan initial in-person sessions, even if it's just standing at one end of the desk and they're at the other end of the desk, just send them click here. No, not click there, because we also work with a very, very vast range of online platforms. And when you're talking to someone over Teams, you can't just say, okay, now skip from CVCRM to your Google page, now switch from there over to your Zendesk and things, because this completely new person who may never have worked in this kind of very intense environment might be completely lost. So we would always agree that there would have to be at least one person that they could refer to, at least for the first, you know, a couple of weeks or so, when they're still trying to get their head around all of the different programs and processes and platforms and conventions. Because, you know, for some programs you work like this, and for some programs you do completely different things that don't make sense if you're not working on the program you're working on before. So I think we'd have to factor in collaboration in a big way. I just don't see how a lot of the op stuff would immediately translate to someone in a completely virtual way without us, you know, having a massive sort of 5-hour meeting with that person. So I'd say, yeah, that's
a big thing. I don't even think then it would convey I think we're in an unusual and lucky position that we are part of a team that has had the basic same core members for the past 3 years. And that shorthand is there. But some of that's also kind of got diluted and lost in places as well. So I've noticed when we've been back in the office together, and it's not the same as it was, but it never was going to be. Mm. But yeah, just some of that shorthand, and how someone would jump on something when we used to be together, has changed. And I think that's our form of communication has changed as well, because we are much more reliant on instant messaging and things like that. But we then also understand how each other message, and where a new member of staff might think, oh, that's come across as really bossy. And it's like, actually, no, it's just a note that's there, that so everyone's reminded, and it's the way that we talk to each other, not that anyone's judging or telling anyone off or bossing anyone around. It's at times we don't have much time to put a complex message across, and it can be quite a blunt instruction.
Yeah, I completely agree with all those things, and I think a lot of it raises questions about how, I think you have to basically look back over how you've done things in the past and try and think of new ways to make it work in hybrid. And that is a slow process. It's not something that's going to change overnight. But that does lead me on to the longer term things. And these aren't things that we've actually directly experienced. We may experience them in the future, but there are quite a few things that came up with research, stuff like presenteeism, proximity bias, accidental favoritism. One that was quite strange was a sort of lack of trust with more invasive forms of management. Thankfully, we haven't had that at Charity Digital. But at the same time, I want to talk about these, maybe quite exclusionary. They broadly seem to be, could be exclusionary in the future. And how, you know, those could be avoided, and how companies, it's not so much, I don't think many companies would be obviously purposely doing these things, but they are kind of accidental things that can come as a sort of result of hybrid working. Could anyone speak on that a little bit?
I think it all comes down to trust, doesn't it? Trust works both ways. So if the work's getting done, it should be assumed that work is happening, and not just because it's not being seen, it's not, you know, happening. I think that's, so it should be trust from above, but also trust that if that you're, that it's not going to be presenteeism. It's not going, like, if you're there in person, you're not going to be chosen above the person that's not there, and that in a meeting that your voice is going to be heard and everything. So I think you need to, I think trust is the bottom line, really. And presenteeism is really interesting in itself, because I think before COVID it was very, you know, people coming to work with colds because they felt they needed to be seen to be working and things like that. Obviously with COVID now, you can't do that. That's dangerous. I think presenteeism is a really big risk that needs mitigating. And I think it comes down to trust ultimately.
Yep. I think it's so, so complicated as well. And I agree, completely echo Laura's point about trust, because when I was sort of reading around some of the resources you shared with Yoann, it kind of struck me how there's work and then there's hybrid working and then there's interpersonal relationships, and how much of sort of emotional minefield it is when you're sort of reading, you know, someone feels excluded, or a project gets assigned to someone else, or a task that you were expecting to receive has been given to someone else, or the nature of the project has changed, and, you know, you didn't know until the last minute. And it's kind of managing those sorts of things. And it's really important that employers think about streamlining all of their employees and, you know, making a sort of very emotionally cohesive, or a kind of virtually cohesive sort of group of people, so you don't end up in a situation where you kind of are effectively running a sort of organization of different groups of people where, you know, someone thinks this and someone thinks that. And then I think one of the biggest things that's come out of the pandemic is that, you know, when you sort of send a message that you just meant to be, you know, direct, and like Stuart said earlier, you weren't being bossy, you weren't judging, you weren't being sarcastic, but once it's been received that way, that just opens the floodgates. And then, you know, a person in a pandemic can't go anywhere, can't see anyone, your imagination will go wild with that. And then, you know, you end up in a situation where you're kind of thinking, well, what's going on? So I think it's really, really important for employers to think about how they can maintain relationships with sort of every level of the organization and every single team member, to make sure that you have that kind of virtually cohesive group of people that are all pulling together and all focusing forward. Because when you're able to be in the office, these things, they can't fester for very long because they become very, very obvious. So you can fix them almost before they become an issue. But I think within the virtual sort of world, things can fester. So you almost have to develop a sort of sixth sense, or a kind of mindset of, you know, keeping an eye out to see what is a conversation and what is something that needs to be addressed or picked up and, you know, kind of navigated. So yeah, very interesting times to be in, but a lot to think about for employers in terms of how to manage organizations moving forward.
I think that's where regular check-ins really help, because I find that if there's a question I'm a bit too scared to like ask straight away, I can save it up for that check-in, and I know that it's happening regularly, so it's not going to be something that festers. And also that helps with asking. It sort of works both ways, because it ends up making it easier for me to ask the question in the first place, because I talk to them all the time. I know what their mannerisms are like. I know that they're cool with it and stuff like that. So, yeah.
I think it does also raise the point of sort of having set rules as well, to a degree. Because I think one of the things that happens is, like, and this happened a lot pre-COVID, and of course these things have changed, but before, people would sort of work late to prove themselves, and then they put themselves into like sort of 9 o'clock. And if you were, they were vying for a promotion or something like that, you'd sort of try and match them. Or if you didn't match them, you felt that you weren't, you know, doing, you weren't up to par or something like that. And that became a bit of a slippery slope. And that's always existed to a degree. But I think with hybrid working, there's that risk too, that, okay, we're, you know, you're 2 days in an office, but it'd be great if you did three. And then suddenly that there's that person who's doing 5 days because they're aiming for proximity bias, and they're aiming to be sort of seen as the person who's coming in. But of course, other people have other problems and other needs and other desires or whatever it is, and those things have to happen. That's why you need that basic 2 days a week. You're in 2 days a week. That doesn't mean 2 days, but you're coming in five to impress your boss or anything like that. I think that's something that a lot of charities could take. It is about trust, yes, and I agree with Laura, but you do also need structures that people adhere to make sure they don't go too far. It's not just we need them in the office 2 days a week. It's we don't need them in 5 days a week, because that sets a precedent for other people, and it can create that accidental favoritism. Favoritism nonetheless. Yeah,
I couldn't agree more. Apparently the average working hours increased by 30 minutes during the pandemic, just because people were doing that, like working, you know, I think sometimes you actively need to be told to log off, that, you know, the work will be there. You'll be okay.
Yeah. they had I think in France they've got legislation that's making you log off now, isn't it? And a lot of EU countries are considering it as well, because essentially people, particularly, I mean, we saw this pre-pandemic as well, where people were more hours. They were on trains for an hour and a half getting into London, and they're working that entire journey, working on their way back. I think there does need to be this thing. And it's not just for the sake of the well-being of the employee, but it's good for everyone. The charity and the organization, you want your employees to enjoy working. It's good for retention, employee retention. It's also good for almost everything across the board. So it's a good structure to set. And yeah, it's definitely something we've been working on at Cherry Digital. I know from sort of management coming down, it is about setting those things. And yeah, so I certainly enjoy working for companies that do make these things clear and allow people to sort of work under that premise. So I think we've got a few minutes. So I'm going to move on to individual needs. So now we really just talk about anything that the company can do to make things better. So let's start with equipment or anything you want to talk about, really, equipment, communication. How can the charity ensure that these things are taken care of?
I think one of the things that we did as an organization that certainly helped was fairly sort of close to the beginning of the pandemic was actually take stock of what equipment people had, what they were using, and what they actually needed to be successful. And I think that there is an onus on the employee to speak out when the equipment might not necessarily be right, that you need a solution for something. One of the big things that I've experienced going back into the office is actually there's very few desks that I can sit at where I can connect my laptop to a larger monitor, because the majority of the monitors have got a different connector type than that's on my laptop. And it might not seem like much, but I need a bigger screen. I need to be able to see what I'm doing. The laptop screen isn't necessarily suitable, and where I am responsible for some of that at home with my own equipment, so with my own monitor. When I go into the office, I would expect that equipment to be there for me. I also use a different style keyboard to most people and things like that. Again, something that I've supplied for myself, but I should be able to request that and have that in the office available to me.
Yeah.
So the fact that I'm kind of using a hybrid of my own equipment, office equipment, not everything is necessarily available for everybody, because we do all have such different tech needs and it's not a one solution fits all. So it's what do you need and how do you use it is a big thing.
Yeah, I think it's massive as well in terms of charities. It's just an audit, really. And then again, when you're catering to individual needs, it seems so simple, but it should be a question of, what does everyone want? What does everyone need? Find out what that, and then see what you can achieve, basically. Laura, were you going to jump in there?
No, I just agree. And it's also, you know, whether people can use it as well. If you're giving like a laptop out, or, you know, this, we're all getting used to this new way of working. And I think that, don't just assume that people can run with that sometimes. I think, a little bit of a tutorial will go a long way, even if it is over Zoom or whatever.
I think it will have to be over Zoom. So a lot of advice, I think, boils down to that, doesn't it? Like asking charities, and particular charities just asking their employees, what is it you want, and seeing what they can manage. And of course, like, people won't be able to manage everything. I mean, if we asked for the tech we actually wanted, I think we'd get a pretty swift no.
Definitely.
But at the same time, you can't help but the asking question and the auditing. I think it's so important. We have a lot of information on our site about how to do tech audits and all these things, and see what you have and what capacity you have, and stuff like the cloud, for example. The cloud's obviously become massive, during the sort of shift away from office work, but a lot of people don't really use the cloud. We use it, but we don't use it exclusively, and that's something that requires a bit of a sort of shift, doesn't it? You know.
Yeah, completely.
Yeah, well, I think we are coming up to time. So thank you, everyone. Is there anything else anyone wants to mention at the end of this pod?
It's been lovely to meet everyone. I just want to say that. It really has. Like, it's made a really big difference to, yeah. My housemate's got a really close relationship with her colleagues, and I was a bit jealous of it. But I was like, oh, you're only 3 months in, don't worry. And then I genuinely feel that the first few times I've met people really made that better. So it's really been great to be in person as well. But yes, it's also good to be, I like the hybrid way. Basically. Sorry if I over talked too much.
No, that's brilliant. It's a lovely ending for it. But yeah, I mean, you do need, that's a massive point as well on the hybrid, isn't it? Like, we need to socialize in person. I mean, those Zoom calls were, I mean, they were nice when I was joining, but my first sort of six socials with Charity Digital was pub quizzes over Zoom and stuff like that. And it's not the same. It's nice seeing people in person. But yeah, I'll end on that. Sorry, Stuart.
I was just agreeing that, yeah, it is very different. And one of the things that I've really enjoyed recently, especially, is the new hybrid catchphrase, as it were. We've gone from telling people that they're on mute to asking people to put themselves on mute when they're all together. And I just love the complete sort of 180 that's caused.
It's like a compassion fatigue, isn't it? Okay, well, that's our time. Thank you so much for joining me, everyone. And if anyone wants to learn more about hybrid working, we have so much information on our Charity Digital website, where we've got a series dedicated to it. We have previous podcasts on how you can reap all the benefits. And always get in touch if you have any questions. Again, thank you to all our guests for joining us today. And thank you to everyone at home for listening. We hope you enjoyed the podcast, and we will see you next time. Thank you all.
Thank you.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye.